You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
Andrew Gunling is such a psychopath.
When the clock struck six, it meant one thing.
Just horse. You're right, it was Nom. I gotta give a closer look to Peter's region.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's Andrew Gunling.
You couldn't possibly understand the hurt.
That's right, Andrew Gunling filling in for Peter Rosenberg tonight on ENN. A very special ENN, probably the first one I've ever done with myself, Dan Grasso, and Gordon Damer. This is history.
There you go.
History in the making.
There you go.
And we begin this ENN by saying hello first to Dan.
All right, bro. Let's bang it out.
And next up we say hello, Gordon.
I did not take my hand off the piece.
Never do.
Wow.
There you have it. A little bit of breaking news to start ENN, actually. Real breaking news.
Ooh.
I don't know if you've been on Twitter in the last, 30 minutes or so, but there's a fire at RFK Stadium in Washington, D.C., which I did not even realize was still standing. D.C. Fire and EMS have tweeted, working fire at RFK Stadium. Hashtag D.C.'s bravest have located several fires in below-grade levels in the stadium in the process of extinguishing. No injuries reported. Investigators en route. And there's some interesting video from inside the stadium. You see smoke coming out from what used to be, I guess, the Nationals' dugout. It almost looks haunted in the stadium. There's weeds growing all over the field. It's really strange. So there you go. If you want to go on Twitter and check that out.
I will do that immediately.
Yeah.
What is that operational for these days?
Apparently,
they have weeds growing there, Dan.
Honestly, it looks like a haunted stadium. If you were to go on Twitter, you'll see. It doesn't look like it's been used for anything in years, and I don't know why it would still be standing. Maybe there's some reason.
Old Washington fans probably want to blame Dan Snyder for it.
He's probably behind it. If we've learned nothing from anything else, it's probably something.
So you don't think it's unrealistic that the first phone call that investigators are going to make upon hearing this news is to Dan Snyder?
Right. Some sort of, okay, what'd you do?
Right.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Let's see. We begin ENN tonight with a little bit of Mets. Max Scherzer making his return for the Mets tonight against the Reds. They managed to go 26-15 without him. Here he is, Scherzer, talking about his excitement over returning to the mound.
Yeah, you just got to be on the bench and, talking shop with the guys and understand different situations that I see and be able to still be a part of the team and helping guys out. There's different things that happen every single day in the big leagues that you see from the bench that you can always, talk with your teammates of different situations that happen. So, that's where I have a pretty good feel for what goes on. So, excited to get back, with the team, join them. Officially now, get things going.
So he'll be on the mound tonight. Props to Scherzer also, by the way. After his final start with AA Binghamton, he reportedly paid somewhere around $7,000 for the post-game food spread.
Yeah.
Here he was talking about that as well.
Take care of the post-game spread?
Oh, yeah.
Any details?
They're eating well tonight.
Yep. You know what was on the menu?
Did you see what it was specifically? It was ribeyes. Mm-hmm. Ribeye steaks, lobster, and filet mignons. And he also kicked in and bought every guy on the team a pair of AirPods as well. So, I mean, he paid it forward, as they say, which is cool.
That's class. And people will say, there will be the haters that say, oh, well, look at the contract he just signed. It's the least he could do. But, look, you don't have to do anything.
He doesn't have to do anything.
Right.
You can just show up and leave.
Exactly.
It's over.
Well, and you know what it does? It kind of now passes the baton and puts the onus on Jacob DeGrom.
Good point.
Because Jacob DeGrom, right, he made the start for St. Lucie the other night. I think he's making one more at least for single A. So he might have to make a couple stops up through the ranks of the Mets minor leagues. And I think that every level he passes, DeGrom is going to have to at least maybe kick in for a few pizzas afterwards, something. Because
pizza?
Scherzer did.
Pizzas, no, the minor leaguers can afford pizza. They gotta get a high quality ribeye or a nice sectional couch, something out of this deal.
A sectional couch. So how many guys around Major League Baseball you think saw what Max Scherzer did, and instead of their reaction being, "Oh, that's pretty cool," they kind of rolled their eyes and thought, oh, "Come on, Max."
Well, how many make $43 million a year?
That's true. That's true. But
Gordon,
pizza, I don't know.
Gordon, you remember once upon a time there was a thing called the Newark Bears?
Sure.
I can't remember which guy it was. It was either Jose Canseco or Ricky Henderson. It was one of the two. Because, like, Ricky played till he was, like, 50. He never wanted to quit baseball, so he played with the Newark Bears. And I think Canseco passed through there when he was trying to make it back to the big leagues. One of those two gentlemen, I forgot who it was, but I remember reading at the time, they bought those college dorm-sized refrigerators for every guy, like, on the team. And I thought, like, oh, that's pretty cool. But that's nothing compared to what Max Scherzer's doing here.
No. Throwing a couple of Rolexes around. I mean, it's going to cost you a lot of money here. I mean, I know he makes
a
lot of money.
Minor leaguer.
But yeah. I mean, when you find out, if you're a minor leaguer and you find out that some major leaguer is, there almost has to be a level of expectation. We're going to get something good, guys. There's got to be something good coming our way. What's coming? What are we getting?
You guys mentioned Jacob deGrom. He appears to be closer to returning to the Mets as well. In his first rehab start, he threw 24 pitches, struck out 5 of the 6 batters he faced, hit triple digits on 7 of his 24 pitches. What did the organization think of deGrom dialing it up like that for his first rehab start? Here's Buck Showalter.
Throwing 100 is who he is. Do you have any apprehension when he goes out there after missing basically a year? And
so I have curiosity. How do we all know? I think I know the answer. I guess it's like broadcast, and it's easy to get the velocities and stuff. Because we had it at 99.9. I'm just kidding.
As a
no. No. How do I feel about him throwing hard?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? You know?
Tell him to throw less hard.
It's coming out good. It's not because he's trying to at max effort torque. He's got a rested arm. He's very, I'm sure he's got a lot of positive emotion going. You're assuming it hasn't been talked about. I mean, what do you think he's going to do when he comes up here? I mean, I don't think he's going to dial it back there, so I guess he's getting ready for what he's going to be asked to do up here.
Was that
Buck at the Oscars
the
there?
What
is going on back there?
There was a live studio audience. They were really impressed with his answers.
Imagine
great
that. Like a town hall with Buck Showalter on the road in Cincinnati talking about Jacob deGrom.
I think it was just B-roll for people who were actually curious in the clip. But yeah, what do you make of that? Does Buck in any way sound a little bit annoyed? Can you understand the Mets maybe being annoyed that deGrom is dialing it up like that in his first rehab start?
To be honest with you, like 100% honest with you, I have a bad case of ADD, and I was more distracted by the B-roll, so I didn't hear anything that Buck Showalter just said. Gordon, why don't you take this?
I think they would only be annoyed if they told him ahead of time, hey, let's not go out there and go full bore here, right? Let's take it a little
easy.
Which,
by the way, it sounded like Buck kind of implied that by saying, how do you know it hasn't been talked about?
Right. I think he was just trying to be glib there. I don't get the sense that the Mets have told him to dial it down or anything like that. So that, to me, that would be the only reason why they would be upset, because we kind of have seen at other times that he is going, if he has the ball in his hand, he's on the mound, he's going to throw as hard as possible.
Yeah.
I think it's a case of, like, if you want to make this analogy to guys who play, I mean, even some baseball players, like guys who go all out. And you say, oh, well, maybe they got to, tailor it back a little bit and put the foot on the brakes, if you will, just so they can maybe stay injury-free, preserve their bodies a little bit. It's like, that's the only way they know how to play. This is the only way that Jacob deGrom knows how to pitch. I don't know. It's like, if they're going to go, they're going to go.
I don't know, though. Like, where was he at? Class A? He can only throw 102 at, I don't know. I feel like he could dial it back. He just doesn't want to. He's using this time to prepare him to get back to the major leagues. This is how he'll pitch in the major leagues, so this is why he's going to do it. I think if he wanted to throw it softer, he could.
Did you see, I don't remember if it was like the video or a picture or whatever, of like every guy on the team, the St. Lucie Mets, so I don't know how many players it was, 20-something, they're like in a line, like standing like 5-10 feet behind DeGrom when he was doing his pregame bullpen session, which is like off the third base side there. And it was just like, these dudes are just like captivated being that close to Jacob deGrom and needed like that up close view.
I saw that too.
Guy.
It was like he was teaching a clinic.
exactly. It was like a Tom Emanski workout, except this one was on pitching.
Yeah, or like they won a contest to watch Jacob DeGrom pitch.
Yeah, the Jacob DeGrom summer camp on how to pitch from Port St. Louis, Florida.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully everybody's hat fit a lot better than Fred McGriff's in the Tom Emanski videos. They were very,
do you
very stiff hat.
Do you believe Fred McGriff, by the way? Like, he said that he had never watched one of those.
Yeah, of course. No, that was strictly something they brought to him that they were looking to sell, and Fred McGriff got paid a certain amount. Yeah, no, I absolutely believe he never watched a single second of those videos.
And that's how Andrew.
Like, do people think that, like, the people that are used in advertisements actually use the product every single time? Especially big name people? Of course not.
Andrew, if we're talking about guys who should be in the Hall of Fame that aren't, I'm coming at you with Fred McGriff 7 days a week and twice on Sunday.
So, home run wise, what did he finish up at? 492?
493 or okay. 4, I think. But you got to remember about Fred McGriff here. It's like, we're going to use the 500 number as like the end-all, be-all, which, unless you have any sort of ties to steroids, that gets you into the Hall of Fame. Fred McGriff, let's remember something. 1994, when we had the player strike, he lost about, what, 40 to 50 games that year? Like, you mean to tell me he wouldn't have found a way to hit 7 more home runs in that 1994 season alone, the way the ball was flying out of the yard that season? So, no player strike in 94. He's probably at 500 home runs, and we're not even having this conversation.
Yeah, 5-time All-Star, 3-time Silver Slugger. That's, yeah, it's tough. He probably should be in.
Braves never won a World Series until they traded for him. Let's remember that.
Good point. Let's see, guys, we were talking about it last hour. Kevin Durant watch in full effect as the NBA world sits and waits for what the Nets will do with their superstar. Still really nothing to report on this one, as it's becoming clearer each day that the Nets are not really in a hurry to make a deal. Here's Bobby Marks on ESPN explaining why that is.
Not like the Nets are sitting in a room right now with their whiteboard and have all the trade options thinking, you know what, by tomorrow night at midnight, we have to move this player. They're content as far as getting the right package. And when you saw the Rudy Gobert trade, when Gobert was traded for potentially 5 first-round picks, they're thinking, wait a minute, we've got Kevin Durant, a top 5 player. We'd like the same package and picks, but we'd also like the same package and players also here. So there's no guarantee that Durant is moved. There's a possibility we get to training camp that he's still on the Nets roster.
I don't blame the Nets one bit for waiting this one out.
No, well, I'll say this. Like, hold you hostage.
Yeah, the idea that Kevin Durant has this list of he wants to go here, he wants to go there, why would the Nets care any bit about where he wants to go? Like, at some point, the Nets have to get back to caring about the Nets, and this would seem like the perfect time to do so.
Yeah. Now, Kendrick Perkins spoke about this. Here's some next-level thinking from Perk talking about Durant's trade demand.
I don't believe Kevin Durant. I don't believe it at all. Matter of fact, it makes zero sense to me that he wants to be traded at this point. I don't believe he believes it. I think Kevin Durant is doing this as a scare tactic in order to help Kyrie Irving have leverage to get him signed long-term with the Brooklyn Nets.
Do you buy that? Is this just an elaborate leverage play? I mean, we knew KD and Kyrie were good friends, but this would take their friendship to an even higher level, I would think. Durant kind of almost sacrificing his reputation to help Kyrie get a big contract? I don't know.
How can anybody be really good friends with Kyrie, though? Like, how many times? Like, and look, I don't know the intricacies and the ins and outs of their relationship, but I mean, like, just over the last few years, it would seem to me that if you are going to combine work and play, that Kyrie has left Kevin Durant and the Nets organization at the altar more than a couple of times, I would think, over the last couple of years. Why would this friendship continue to be so strong? Can somebody explain that to me?
I will go out on a limb and say this. I have never had a friend like Kevin Durant is friends with Kyrie Irving. I have never had a friend that would go to this extreme for me. I will tell you that right now. I don't think most people have.
That's like the foxhole guy. Like, if you need a guy to be in a foxhole with, like, you know, Kevin Durant is that guy, apparently, just upon his relationship with Kyrie Irving.
I would always want somebody in the foxhole who is really good at firing a rifle. Like, everybody always talks about being in the foxhole, like, this good person, this good... No, I don't care if he's a good person or a good dude. Does he have really good aim? That's what I would... That's my first... requirement.
Or if there was a way to cook in the foxhole, he was proficient when it came to
that. I can figure out the cooking myself. I need somebody who can fire a gun very accurately.
Just aiming That's
just
my
aiming.
Only
That's the qualification.
Only requirement I need.
Yeah. Let's see, guys. Some news out of the NFL. Researchers, this is not great. Researchers have determined that Demaryius Thomas, who died last December at just 33 years of age, had stage 2 CTE. His family believed seizures, which Thomas had battled since a 2019 car crash, might have led to his death. The coroner's office in Fulton County, Georgia, has not yet ruled on the cause of death. Now, doctors at Boston University said Thomas had stage 2 CTE, which is associated with, quote, progressive behavior, cognitive and mood abnormalities. Thomas's relatives say he developed depression and anxiety and had panic attacks in the years before his death. Stage 4 is the most severe state of CTE and is usually associated with dementia. Dr. Ann McKee, who was part of the Boston University research team, said Thomas most likely died after having a seizure, a condition not generally associated with CTE. But like I said, there's been no official ruling on his cause of death as of yet. But that's more sad news on what was already a really sad story about Demaryius Thomas.
I mean this in all seriousness. Has there ever been a person who was, by their family, suspected of having CTE and they didn't have it?
If he played football, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. Like, has there ever been a famous athlete who played football who the family, like, we want to have his brain studied, and it turned out that they didn't have it? Because if there has been, I don't know.
When I saw that today, I was surprised by that because, like, I say you get to know somebody, right? Like, how well do you know them? But I got to know Demaryius Thomas a little bit. He was a Jet in 2019. So, you know, this was pre-COVID, of course, so locker rooms were open. You could actually go sit there and, you know, rub elbows with these guys, have conversations, and get to know them a little bit. And he was the nicest dude, down-to-earth dude, joking around. Like, he was somebody that you never even saw any sort of potential mood swings or, you know, nothing. He was always upbeat when it came to that stuff. So I was really, really surprised. I knew about the seizure stuff because when he passed away, like, that had been reported that right. That was something he was dealing with. But as far as, like, CTE and stuff, I was shocked when I saw that because he was such a good dude. And nobody had any negative to say about Demaryius Thomas.
Yeah, very sad. And it seems, you know, more and more, as they continue to conduct research on this, it seems that players, while they can't diagnose anybody while they're still alive, it feels like behavioral changes are becoming more and more obvious as to who might be at risk of one day being diagnosed. It's really sad. So that news for Demaryius Thomas.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Guys, are the Knicks in danger of falling afoul of the league's tampering?
Bing bong!
Fred Katz, who covers the Knicks for The Athletic, said that the Mavericks were, quote, quite frustrated about reports of a deal being agreed to with the Knicks and Jalen Brunson before teams were technically allowed to speak with free agents. They were also unhappy about Worldwide West, who's a senior advisor for the Knicks, sitting courtside for a Mavericks-Jazz playoff game. Now, of course, the weird variable in all of this is going to be Rick Brunson and Jalen Brunson, the father-son connection. So how does the league regulate those conversations? I guess the question is going to be here as to whether or not there's enough evidence beyond those two specifically to actually punish the Knicks for any tampering charges. Because I don't know how you do it based on Rick and Jalen.
Well, did the Mavericks raise this within the league office?
I don't think anything has been technically filed
but
yet.
But no, I'm saying, did they complain to the league when Worldwide West was at the game? Or is it only based on the results of him signing with the Knicks that now they're going to say there was tampering? Because if it was so clear to you that there was tampering, you should have probably, if him going to that game and sitting courtside was such an issue, the whole league is based on tampering. Every single year there's $100 million contracts that are signed seconds after, sometimes I think even before, but certainly seconds after the clock strikes whatever. Is it midnight, 4 o'clock,
right.
Whatever it is. Now, all of a sudden, the Knicks finally land a guy. Wait a second. It's tampering. We got tampering. There's tampering every single year. What are we doing?
Well, the Bulls and Heat did get in trouble just a year ago. The Bulls for Lonzo Ball and the Heat for Kyle Lowry.
All right.
So it does happen.
Second-round pick?
Second-round picks.
All right. Take a second. Knicks got 1,000 second-round picks. Take them. Yeah. Take a second-round pick.
like the NFL has that like legal tampering window as well for free agency, right? Which is like in the middle of March, a couple of days before the league year kicks in. Do you know how many conversations are had? Like for and really the hot spot is the NFL scouting combine, which is in like late February. Agents are there, GMs are there. All these free agent deals, a lot of them are even being brokered then. And that's why the, you know, the second that the legal tampering window hits, to your point, Andrew, or whatever, like, you know, that's when Adam Schefter is reporting that so-and-so is ready to sign a deal with, because that was worked out at the combine, you know, a month prior. And if World Wide West is sitting courtside, all right, I could see if he was sitting up in the nosebleeds and he paid his way into the arena that night, you know, as you know, Joe Blow or whatever. Don't you realize that the Mavericks and any one of these teams, they know exactly who's sitting courtside. Those are expensive tickets. Those don't fly out of thin air. They knew that World Wide West was there. When they look at the list and say, oh, William Wesley, courtside, you mean to tell me that the antennas didn't go up then and thinking, this might be a little odd, don't you think?
It probably did. I mean, and we were, I mean, this was in the postseason when this happened. The Jalen Brunson to the Knicks talk was already in full effect.
Oh,
at that
of
point.
Course. I mean, like the fact that if Leon Rose did not land Jalen Brunson, it would almost be like a loser leave town match in wrestling. You would. I mean, you can never have more connections than this guy had with the family.
And that's why it's on ridiculous. Draft night. When every Knicks fan was ready to jump ship and say, what are they doing? How do they punt on the draft, trading all these picks? Yeah, because you knew then, with everything the Knicks did on draft night, that they must have had some sort of word, some sort of tip with all the connections, like you said, Gordon, that they were getting this guy. And that's why they acted like they did on draft night. I've said all leading up to free agency, what would have looked absolutely worse for the Knicks is if they didn't get him. Whether you think
absolutely.
They overpaid for the guy, whether you think he's not worth the money, or even if he becomes a bust during his entire time with the Knicks, to me it would have looked worse, given all the connected dots, if Brunson, of all people, would have said, nah, thanks, but no thanks, like every other significant free agent seems to do with the Knicks.
And it would be kind of weird if Jalen Brunson didn't take the deal the Knicks offered. I mean, he got wildly overpaid. Like, do the Knicks really need to tamper in that case if they're paying the guy, I don't know what, $8, $10 million more than anybody else was offering a year?
Andrew, do you know that Jalen Brunson, by the way, has a house on the Jersey Shore?
Is that right?
That's accurate. Don't know where, though, but it's there. And I'm sure, I don't know if he has Philly flags or New York flags outside of the house, though.
That's a good question. He's from where? New Brunswick? Went to school in Philly?
Well, he was born there, but I think he grew up probably a little further south-ish. Kind of.
Right? I would guess just through his Villanova ties alone that he'd be more of a Philly guy, but
that's my guess. Know. Yeah.
And his father went to Temple, so yeah, that would
I
be
hated
my guess.
Those Temple
do you, I mean, again, do you really need to have that many teams. Meetings to offer a 4-year, $110 or $104 million contract? Wouldn't seem like the meetings would have to be all that.
Well, and speaking of the meetings, weren't like the night before free agency, we heard he was going to meet with the Heat and the Mavericks. And then all of a sudden the Mavericks said, nah, you know what? We're not going to do the meeting. Well, why? Because wasn't the William Wesley thing like in the cards? And didn't Dallas know when they thought they were going to set up the meeting? It was it only because of World Wide West that they're like, nah, we better not because we're not going
to
get him.
Did World Wide West point out to Leon Rose, hey, by the way, did you know that you used to be the agent for this player? Like, well, why is World Wide West
your
name
son
even
is
getting
his
mentioned
agent
here?
For crying out loud?
Leon Rose's own child is
right.
Jalen Brunson's
that's what I'm
agent.
Saying. Like, why is World Wide West even getting involved here? Like, there seems like a pretty strong connection even without World Wide West being involved.
Yeah. Let's see.
Hey, Leon, how's your son doing? Oh, he's doing all right. Hey, I just read in the paper. He's Jalen Brunson's
he
agent.
He is?
And then it's
wow.
Like,
wait
no
a second.
Way.
Wait until Jalen Brunson finds out his dad is working for the Knicks.
Holy crap.
Dad, what are you doing here? I'm a coach.
You're here too?
Oh, my God. Who knew?
Small world.
Let's see. Guys, what's the most – I don't know if you are sports memorabilia guys at all. What's the most you would pay for sports memorabilia?
Oh.
Wow, depends
well,
on
is it like
runs.
Luis Gonzalez's gum? Like
okay, well, how about Steph Curry's
time?
Jersey from game one of this year's NBA Finals?
Well, that's a valuable piece. Not so much for me. I might be out of my range, but
so
yeah,
just,
I can see
that.
People jumping on that.
It just went in a 101 bid auction for a little over $203,000.
I mean,
wow!
It was the game where he hit six threes in the first quarter.
But, all right, humor me for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, and it's really with any of this type of game used merchandise, whatever. How do we know? Like, if I was going to invest that kind of money, that this was a game one, game worn jersey, I want to see video of the time lapse.
It comes with an Eli Manning certificate.
Right, Eli's picture is on the back of the certificate saying, it's real, yeah, you can count on me. Believe no, but I want to see a video of, like, the time when Steph takes the jersey off, you know, somebody takes the jersey, puts it away in storage, and then it ends
even
up
then,
right in
even
front
then
of me.
You can't know. Like,
exactly.
You ever see, like, David Blaine do these magic tricks? They might bring in David Blaine, and he all of a sudden can do a magic trick that makes you think you're getting the real jersey, and it's not the real jersey. You never know.
Yeah, that's probably what happened. I don't know.
You never know.
I like to believe in things. I believe that this is real. Now, I should tell you that that is not even close to the most expensive game-worn jersey that's gone to auction. Care to guess? It's hard to guess, but...
Yeah, probably the Tom Brady one, that because they had to get it out of Mexico because the guy stole it, who was the Mexican reporter, took it home, and then they had to get it across boundaries.
So I don't know what that one went for. I'm not sure about that one. The one I saw is NBA also.
Jordan's flu game jersey?
No. I don't know if that ever went to
auction. That would be a good one.
Yeah.
That would be disgusting.
Although you might
actually
catch the flu from it, right?
Does
flu last on something like that? Like, what's the medical?
You can't be too careful. If the last couple of years have taught us anything, you can't be too careful.
Right. You can only handle it if you're wearing a hazmat suit.
Yes. But it comes with the hazmat suit, which also has a certificate of.
It was a game-worn jersey from Kobe Bryant's rookie season, which went for $3.69 million.
Holy crap.
Yep.
It must be nice, like, to have a life where you can spend that on a jersey.
Like, how do you know? I just, like, that's my answer to, even if it's like a game-used ball, a game-used bat, how do you know?
Like I said, sometimes you just have to take that leap of faith and believe.
Not for that coin, you don't. I'm going to need a little bit more to go on than just faith. Sorry.
Look, if you're someone who can spend $3.5 million on a jersey, chances are $3.5 million is not really changing your life all that much.
That's a fair point.
Yeah.
Finally here, I mentioned Max Scherzer's nice gesture earlier to his AA teammates. Well, here's Ja Morant leaving a $500 tip for a waitress who did not know who he was. This video is from @ShotByNye on Twitter from Ja Morant's new docuseries. Here's the audio of it.
Who are you, though?
It's Black Jesus.
You who?
Black Jesus.
Now, you some kind of professional. You play football, basketball, or something?
Basketball.
What school you went to?
I'm not from here.
You're not? Where you from?
South Carolina.
Okay. Where you going? So you play basketball?
Yeah.
You couldn't go to the NBA?
I'm already in there.
Who you playing for?
The Grizzlies.
Your new favorite team. Your new favorite team, the Grizzlies.
That's the team that ball player, Jari.
That's him.
That's him? You that boy?
Yeah.
What's your name?
Ja Morant.
Run that by me again. He was leaving a tip.
He left. He was eating. It looks like a diner or something, and he apparently left her a $500 tip, and so it kind of got her antenna up that he. Not just anyone does that. And so she thought he was somebody, but she couldn't place who it was, and it turned out it was Ja Morant. And she went crazy.
Not for nothing.
She clearly had never heard of Ja Morant before.
No.
Like, if she knew anything about Ja Morant.
Well, I don't care if he's Ja Morant or anybody, but if somebody is already going to commit to give you that very generous tip, why is she playing 20 questions with him? It's almost like
isn't his name on his credit card? Is he paying cash?
It's like she needs to know who he is before she can accept the $500. How about accept the $500 and then worry about who he is afterwards?
Yeah. I think she was just trying to, you know,
And the cameras were rolling too, probably, right?
Yeah, it certainly helps, right?
Yeah. You're both exceedingly wealthy. What sort of large tips have you left in the past? What would be,
I have
go beyond 20%?
The greater the bill, right?
I have left I matched the bill for a restaurant one time because a girl who was waiting on us, it was her first day, and I could tell she was having a hard day. It wasn't $500. I can tell you that right now. But
McDonald's
I did 100%. Look.
Well, let me ask you a
question. Every little bit helps.
Let me ask you what is considered a hard day? Now, is this something that she
you could just tell she was frazzled?
Or did you observe?
No, she was our waitress, and she was working some other tables.
Okay.
And you could tell that she was having a little bit of a. And she mentioned that it was her first day. Now, maybe this is a game she's running.
Mm.
Maybe she uses this every single day.
Hey. That's right out of the used car salesman playbook.
Right.
Not that it's
right.
my first day, but oh my, you know, oh that's my mother's name, or oh that's my father's name.
I don't
so
think she's
so
better
forth.
Call Saul. I don't think that that's what's happening. I don't see she's running game, but it's possible. But it, you could tell she was having a hard time of it, and so.
Well, that's nice of you. It's a yeah. nice gesture.
And it wasn't cash. It was a credit card, so it was not even real money. It was just like pretend. Just sign. Match 100%.
Wow. You are a good man. And that is ENN for this Tuesday night.
There we go.
We're going to have more Andrew ENN the rest of the week, too, which is outstanding, right?
That's right. That is right.
And it's not going to be on Yes as well.
That is also right.
It's not?
Ray
Rowe. Wait a second. I thought it was coming on for the last half hour.
Wouldn't it be great if Yes pops on, like, just for
A brief second. Oh, I saw it.
Like a surprise.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not in television shape right now, so I don't know if that would fly.
Well, I'll tell you right now, if there's a camera in this room that I'm not aware of, that's going to be a real problem.
Okay.
Very problematic. 800-919-3776. That is the telephone number. We still got another half an hour to play with. Anita Marks is coming up at the top of the hour. Got some baseball news applying to the two locals, which we will get to when we return. Plus your phone calls. It's Dan. It's Gordon. It's the K Show. It's 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. The ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.